your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off tonight. We've got really a fine guest with us this evening. He's author of Ruthless Ambitious. Ruthless Ambition, The Rise and Fall of Chris Christie. Welcome to our program, Louis Monzo.
Thank you very much, George. Thank you for having me.
Boy, I tell you what, you've written a heck of a book here. And tell us a little bit about your background first, and then we'll get into the book.
Well, I started off in the public health field. I was the former chief of the Jersey City Health Division, and I was brought to national news back in the 80s when I uncovered massive chromium contamination up in the county where I live, Hudson County, which was dumped there by developers seeking to save on hazardous waste disposal fees. And the problem was they dumped this carcinogen in the fill material that was going to be used for building developments. As a result of this, we had a rash of cancer clusters, mostly affecting young children in our city, and we were able to find out how, who, and why they did it, and actually prosecute the individuals who were responsible. I wound up much later in life becoming a New Jersey State Assemblyman. I served in the 31st District up here in New Jersey, and I served. I was quite noted, quite distinguished. For serving there, received a lot of laurels for 4 years. And then I ran for mayor of Jersey City, and my life crossed paths with Chris Christie, and it's never been the same since.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chris Christie became, what, Attorney General? Is that right?
The U.S. Attorney for New Jersey, that's correct.
Yeah, the U.S. Attorney General for that area in New Jersey. And then there were these series of bid-rigging types of indictments and clusters of indictments. Give us a little background on the bid-rigging. I think you got caught up in the, what, bid-rigging?
There was a series of public corruption busts that Christie had orchestrated when he was a U.S. attorney. And when I say orchestrated, it was the fact that he used confidential informants to seek out mainly his political enemies and to involve them in attempted bribes and whatnot. When we looked back after the fact of Bidrig III, which I was in, He had me arrested for allegedly taking a bribe from his informant. I never did, but that didn't stop the prosecutors who were making contributions to his campaign for governor and had been promised jobs there. I went through a five-year period in court where a judge, a federal district judge, and then an appellate court wind up throwing out all these charges that the prosecutors kept bringing against me. And it was, it cost me my life, my reputation, and my business.
So it took you 5 years to extract yourself from this indictment and this prosecution, is that right?
That's correct.
And during this time, were you still in office for part of that time, or did you?
No, I had actually left office before the Bidrig III sting was involved. And that sting, by the way, the Bidrig III sting was launched by Christie in the year that he decided to run for the governorship of New Jersey. And it so happened that the press and political scientists and whatever, they attributed the notoriety of Bid Rig 3 to his success in that gubernatorial election. It just turned the polling around on him, and it put him in first place in the polling, and it's a lead he never relinquished once the arrest went down.
Were most of the indictments against Democratic candidates or proponents of the Democratic Party, or what?
Yes, they were mostly concentrated in Hudson County, New Jersey, which is a Democratic bastion in New Jersey. And what it did is it crippled the apparatus of the Democratic political stronghold here, because it was the arrest went down in July. They rounded up about 30 people. Many others were also released from their charges subsequent to that, but the notoriety of it just put a crimp into the ability of Democrats to get out a vote in the gubernatorial election in November. And as a result of that, there was a 22,000 vote swing from the previous gubernatorial election in Hudson County, and Christie benefited immensely from that.
What year was the Bid Rig 3 initiated? And give us sort of a time, scale in here, a time line to give our listening audience a little bit of an idea of when this occurred.
Well, Bid Rig 3 went down in 2009. Christie was announced his candidacy in January of 2009 while he just launched the Bid Rig investigation. And the arrest culminated in July of that year, and then the election for governor was in November of that year. My research also developed as a result of finding out what he did in Bid Rig is the fact that most of his prosecutions when he was the U.S. attorney were all tailored to benefiting his rise in politics. And he went after mainly Democrats, mainly in Democratic strongholds, which he needed to weaken in order to win a gubernatorial election in New Jersey. I need to note, George, for your listeners, that very few Republicans have won statewide elections in New Jersey because of the it's a primarily Democratic state. A lot of independent voters, but most of them swing to the Democratic side. So. Christie, if you looked at his prosecutions from the time he was U.S. attorney, he tailored them to taking out all the Democratic strongholds and mainly the Democratic leaders throughout the state.
Well, okay. Now, as you got into your book and your research, how were there actually some people that were guilty of these charges, or how would you give us a percentage or an idea of the were there guilty people involved in this whole Bid Rig 3 or what? What would you say?
Well, six of them wound up having their charges dismissed. Others pled, and here's a fact you need to know.
Okay.
That this is going to astonish you. It astonished me when I found it out, and it'll shock your readers. When U.S. attorneys bring cases, in 97%. Of the cases that they bring, they result in a plea deal, and usually a guilty plea. So people rarely make it into a courtroom, and that's mainly because, George, of the enormous pressure that's put to bear on defendants and the enormous costs associated with trying to defend yourself against the federal prosecution. So a prosecutor, knowing this going in, really has a lot of leeway. He knows that the minute he gets an indictment secured against someone or arrests someone, that 97% of the time that person's going to plead, whether or not they're guilty.
Right. This led later to this this bridge incident. Is that right?
Well, the Bridgegate incident, where Christie used his office again to benefit his political election campaign, is currently under investigation. And from what the evidence has shown so far, you'd have to believe that These close associates in Christie's office just operated on their own and did all this without checking in with their boss, which is hard to believe knowing the type of administrator Christie is. But the behavior there is the same exact behavior that Christie had shown in Bidrig 3 and prior to his becoming U.S. attorney. So it's a constant pattern of corrupt, if you will, behavior on the part of a law enforcement official who really had a ruthless ambition streak inside of him, if you will.
How did you obtain many of these documents? Did you have to do Freedom of Information request or what? How did you go about on your research?
Well, most of them were stocked or stacked into the thousands of pages of discovery that the government gave you, but we asked for other discovery, which they weren't giving us, and one day on my porch arrived a box load of very incriminating documents, government documents, FBI 302s, investigation reports from U.S. Attorney's Office, which could have been from none other than an honest U.S. attorney or FBI agent who saw what was going on and wanted somebody to know that something was awry. I need to let your listeners know that in October of 2009, three whistleblowers came forward to the New York Times and basically told the Times, it was a front page story, that Christie's underlings in the U.S. Attorney's Office actually prosecuted these cases in order to swing the election towards his way. So that's three people from right inside his office who actually named the individuals who were responsible. And because they were U.S. attorneys, as I later find out, these people seem to walk through raindrops and nothing touches them, and the U.S. government doesn't prosecute their own.
Right. The East Coast up there and these large inner cities like you're really knowledgeable about and so forth, have they become bastions of real corruption or not? What is your feel there in your knowledge about some of these New Jersey cities and New York and so forth? What's your basic feel though? Is there some corruption and so forth still going on?
There's always corruption, George.
Yeah.
But when you look at these government stings, most of the government stings that involve people in elective office, there's crimes that are mostly contrived of by the government. In other words, there was no crime existing at the time. The government put a crime in motion to try to trap someone or to test to see if a politician was honest or not. So it's not like someone's calling a hotline and saying, you know, the mayor of this city or the council of this city is corrupt and here's what he did. No, it's the FBI taking an informant and then using him to try to bribe officials. And it's, you know, all you have to do is just make a somewhat of a case and get an indictment. And like I said, the statistics, 97% of the people pleading because of the pressure that it puts on them takes hold of the rest. So yes, there's a corruption problem, but no, it's not as it's made out to be by the government. Most of the cases that they prosecute, again, are crimes that were staged and put in place by the government.
Right. What kind of sentences did most of these people that plea bargained for the Bidrig 3 receive?
Most of them received probation or a six-month probation period. Some of the more serious ones got six-month sentences, and some of the folks who went to trial wound up with 2 to 3 year sentences.
Right. Your earlier work in the health area, do you mm-hmm. think that this was tied to them wanting to get back at you in some way, because it did cost probably, you know, governments or corporations some money, did it not?
Well, it crossed my mind, but this was mainly all about Christie's ambition to become the governor, and you know, You know, it was his, you know, it was all to benefit him. And if I wasn't running for mayor of Jersey City at the time, this wouldn't have happened.
Right. As far as the gambling operation there in Atlanta, it's been suffering a little bit. What's the reason? What's the cause of that? Is it that people are just losing interest in Atlantic City in those casinos, or what's been the change?
It's two things. They're oversaturated. There's too many to make the town work, and you know the economy of the nation itself has something to do with it. And then there's all these, you know, other areas like Pennsylvania's opened up casinos, which are dragging on from there. And Atlantic City never really did what Las Vegas did, and that is offer, you know, something to people who might want a vacation there but don't gamble, so that you have some family entertainment there. And that's something that Atlantic City needs to do.
Right, this George Washington Bridge episode, is he going to skate on there? Is that still ongoing, the investigation by the state assemblyman and so forth, or what?
Well, the state legislature has a more credible investigation, actually, than the U.S. Attorney's Office. In my book, I detail why I believe that the U.S. Attorney's Office itself will let Christie skate and probably go after some of the low-lying fruit in this matter, and probably go after his aides, who, you know, you know, it's hard to believe that they did all this on their own. But U.S. attorneys never go after their own; they never eat their own, and I believe they're going to let him skate.
Right. You say also in your book that you believe that he's a shoe-in for the presidential bid in 2016. Do you think that he's that politically powerful and strong, or what?
Well, he's right now he's leading the polling, and he's got the most money, and more importantly, because he's positioned himself, as I point out in the book, in the first 4 years of office, of going around the country campaigning for people that who won elections and raising money for them. And especially as the chairman of the Republican Governors Association, he's getting around the country and helping other people get elected. He's got a lot of IOUs and chits in the bank that he can rely on from prominent elected officials throughout the country who he can call in. You know, those markers could be called in for support. So he's a credible candidate. The only way I see him having a problem really is if a guy like Mitt Romney or Jeb Bush decided to run for the nomination, and at that point he would have to fold his hands. But the amazing thing is if you read the book, you'll say, how could this guy, you know, with what he's done, and it's not like the book is making, you know, all my accusations. My accusations are based on documents, reports, Christie's words, the words of his associates, and his career, and many documented events in the press. So when you look at that and you put it all together, you say, how did this guy make it that far? And he's got a very chilling and charismatic personality that wins the day for him. Believe it or not, George, he is more popular in states outside of New Jersey than he is in the state itself, where people have now found out about him. It's very hard to find out about someone who you're not around every day.
Right. I mean, that was true here in Austin, Texas, with LBJ. About the same thing occurred. The history of the governorships in New Jersey, have they been dominated in the last few elections by the Republicans?
No, just Christie. Snapped a long streak of Democratic wins. The only time other Republicans had won, Tom Kane Jr. had become governor of New Jersey, and so did Christie Whitman. But they were very, what I would say, moderate Republicans. They weren't ultra conservatives. New Jersey is a more left leaning, moderate, independent state. And usually, if you're a Republican, you're going to win. You're going to have to come middle of the road, and that's what Christie did.
You know, World Trade Center, is there not a Port Authority in New York that works with a Port Authority in New Jersey?
That's correct.
Is that about the bridges and so forth? Tell us a little bit about that relationship there.
Yes, it is. The two governors, the governors of New York and the governor of New Jersey, make the appointments to the Port Authority Board, and they name the chairman. And the reason it's of interest now is because it's how Christie used the Port Authority Board with his people in place. That was the instrument, if you will, that wound up shutting down the George Washington Bridge. And, Cuomo has been, he's the governor of New York. He has been particularly quiet, suspiciously quiet about Christie's involvement in this matter, because there had to be phone calls going back and forth when this was going down, because it was the New York people who exposed the sham of the bridge being shut down and actually put it back in place. But we never got to the bottom of who did Christie make a call. And ironically, Christie has not set foot into New York to help out the challenger to Cuomo in the election. As a matter of fact, Christie's made public comments that he is not going to help the GOP candidate in New York, if he would believe it, who's trying to win against Mario Cuomo, despite the fact that Christie's in charge of the Republican Governors Association. So there's something there between these two guys that hasn't been uncovered yet, but it just doesn't smell right.
The closing of the bridge, it created, there was such a traffic across that bridge, and when it was disrupted, what were some of the worst things that resulted as a result of the closing of the bridge?
Well, Fort Lee was gridlocked, the whole town, and then that resulted in, for example, an emergency call, an ambulance couldn't get to a heart attack victim who later died. Without ever reaching the hospital. And also the schools literally the kids couldn't get to school. They were 3 hours late for 4 days in a row because the school buses couldn't get through town, and people trying to get over to New York through this mess, they were like 2 to 3 hour delays going across the bridge because of the action, his action, because a lot of people shoot through Fort Lee to get onto the George Washington Bridge, and he shut down 4 or 5 lanes, made them into one lane in the height of rush hour. It's just insanity.
Right. You specify an individual, Solomon Dweek, in there?
Yes.
What part does he play in this whole story?
Solomon Dweck is one of these confidential informants. And in particular, he was the confidential informant in Bidrig 3. Dweck defrauded a bank of $50 million by driving up to a drive-in window and cashing a check from a debunked account, if you would believe that. Now, you try going into a drive-in teller's window and cashing a regular check where you have money and you have a problem. This guy did it with $50 million. It led to his being arrested, and then it unfolded his real estate scheme, where he was getting multi-million-dollar investments into real estate projects that didn't exist, and he just kept, selling off properties and getting other investors in until he was in over his head. Some of the banks called his loans in, and when he was arrested for the bank fraud, it exposed what was a $500 million real estate scam, where people were losing their shirts. He bankrupted churches. He bankrupted his friends, his families. So there was an immediacy of getting Solomon Dweck arrested. There was no way this guy needed a plea deal, but he got one. During his being used as the confidential informant in the Bidrig 3, when he went to trial against one of the defendants, a mayor, Anthony Suarez, later found innocent, Suarez's attorney questioned him on the plea deal, and it turned out that Dweck used a $50,000 donation to President Bush's campaign in 2001, made through none other than Chris Christie, to try to get leverage for a plea deal for his arrest after he got arrested. He was asking for actually a presidential pardon. Now, given, you know, that he said he was basically a ham sandwich going to jail, they didn't need to give him a plea deal. He wasn't going to get a pardon, but he did wind up with the starring role in the Bidrig 3 scam, which saved him a lot of jail time. And, you can see that a favor was done. It was later found out, by the way, George, that this was another atrocious thing, that Dweck was mentally incompetent to be testifying at these trials. It was found out after the fact. And what the book shows, and we found out, is that the government had documents that showed, and they knew, that Solomon Dweck was mentally incompetent, yet they used him to put some of the people in Bidrig 3 behind bars, and they never told their defense attorneys that he was an incompetent witness.
My gosh.
Yeah.
The corruption you're saying and you're describing here, about, you know, the FBI and the government and so forth and so on, is that endemic? I mean, is that the way that they make the way politics works today in the country, or how would you describe that? Is that a normal, typical, example here?
I believe a few years ago we had a wake-up call. It was called the U.S. Attorney Scandal, and it touched into neighboring states around Texas. Remember the case involving U.S. Senator DiMenci, him trying to get Gonzalez, the prosecutor, to go after his
political
trial.
That
investigation, okay, spiraled into other U.S. attorneys' offices throughout the country who were doing the same thing. And the U.S. Congress at the time couldn't found and issued a statement. One of the committees investigating the U.S. attorneys' offices throughout the country made a statement that says, we can't guarantee the American people that the prosecutions are not prosecutions aren't politically motivated. That whole thing, that whole hullabaloo over that, all got brushed aside and whitewashed. And I point this out in my book mainly because Christie was involved in a questionable prosecution against U.S. Senator Robert Menendez when Menendez was trying to seek the office against one of Christie's the son of Christie's mentor, Tom Kane Jr. And Christie brought an investigation, a very publicized investigation against Menendez 60 days before the election. He was saying Menendez had taken bribes, this, that, and the other thing. It all was nonsense, nothing to substantiate it, but it almost cost Menendez that election. And Christie, as we found out, he was being investigated for that in this U.S. attorney scandal when Congress looked at it. But at the end of the day, Congress relinquished their investigatory authority back to the Department of Justice, and it would actually, this is the wolf in the hen house, if you will. They just whitewashed everything. We never got to the bottom of it. So the American people should be concerned that there needs to be put in place a system that safeguards that politicians aren't feathering their nests by using, especially offices that are made to prosecute crimes and to uphold justice. Because, you know, once we lose the rule of law, we've lost our society, and there needs to be safeguards put in place in those areas.
Right. What is the demographics overall of New Jersey at this time? Has it changed in the last decade or two?
As far as population has grown a bit, it's primarily I would say it's 35% Republican registered, 25% 35% Democrat registered, 20% Republican, and the rest independent. So mostly independent voting state that tends to lean Democrat. And it's a state that's it's more rural than it is industrialized. Our main, believe it or not, the main industry in New Jersey is horse breeding, believe it or not.
Really? Really?
Yes.
The demographics, is it, what kind of minority breakdown do you have there? Do you have a Latino and black and
yes,
white? How does that break down, basically?
There's a large black population in New Jersey. I would say Caucasian might be about 55 to 60%. I would say a black population would be 25%. You might have a Hispanic population of perhaps 20%, which is rising rapidly, and the rest we have a lot of Indian populations up here. It's mainly diverse, especially in the Jersey City area where I came from, because of the proximity to New York, so it's really a melting pot state.
Right. When you're looking at these demographics and so forth, in comparison to, say, Ferguson, Ferguson is about 80% black out there in Missouri. As far as New Jersey goes, could something just light off like that, that's just still occurring in Ferguson? Or what, is the public fed up with what's going on just in general with politics and corruption and what's going on? Or what's your feel about that?
The public is very laid back here, and I have to say, for the most part, with rare exception, Jersey City, or not Jersey City, New Jersey police forces have never had, outright problems with handling minority communities or abusing where there's an alleged abuse of minority communities. So it's been a pretty together state. People get along very well. The different races, whatever. You have your areas of segregation where but in the major cities you have a melting pot of people all living together and respecting one another.
Right. The latest news out of Ferguson is that the fellow was killed. The individual killed might have been involved in a robbery of that.
Yes, I just heard that today.
Convenience store. We don't know for sure. I think the Black Panthers are out there lobbying very heavily, and Sharpton is out there also.
Yeah, well, the information that they're releasing now, to me, this is why you need to get as much information out as you possibly can, because people might have had a different outlook initially what went on than they did now after hearing this news today, and it might have qualmed some of those nights of violence out there.
Yes, it could have, couldn't it? There's a question that's being raised now on some talk shows. Last night I was listening to martial law and the concept of martial law in this country, the legitimacy of it and so forth. And it looks like that out in Ferguson, and I don't know if this has occurred in your state, and you can give us some examples if it has, it looks like they're using almost military and martial law tactics for just an activist protest type of situation. They're way overreacting with the tear gas and everything else. What do you think?
Yes, I do. Like I said, information, if they had kept putting the information out, they wouldn't have had to gone to the extremes that they had to. But martial law would be a frightening thing, and it's, when you see, one of the things that my book points out is that we really have to wake up and pay attention to what's going on with frivolous, what I say, prosecutions, not only on the federal level but also on the state level, because as a nation, as a civilized nation, we incarcerate more people than any other country in the world, and that's something to say about that. When you start figuring out that, for example, when it comes to one area such as political corruption, when you find out that most of those cases are put together because of the government creating crimes and using confidential informants, you start to scratch your head and say, should the government really be involved in, you know, trying to create crimes to trap people, or should they be just going after the crimes, you know, that are out there and, you know, and using their resources that way?
Boy, that's a very good point, Louis Monzo. They don't need to create more crimes. They need to take care of what existing. In the drug area, what are your thoughts and comments in that? Have they really way overly reacted to drug, small, you know, amounts of drugs like marijuana and stuff? They've really created an industry in prosecuting those people. They should leave them alone, I think.
What they really need to do right now is to get a handle on, and this underscores everything. You know, in the same area where they blanketed FBI people to run this scam sting Bidrid 3, there virtually are massive gang problems involved in the cities of Newark, in Jersey City, which the federal government has been reluctant to send agents in to really go after these gangs, and it's apparent that the federal government has turned yellow when it comes to going after gangs, because they don't want to put their agents in harm's way, and they seem to be cowering in the face of a gang problem that we have as a result of mainly a lot of illegal immigration that's happening. Gangs like, you know, that's happening in Texas right now, where people are coming across the border, and a lot of them are gang related problems, and they're winding up in other states like Jersey City, Newark, throughout the country, in establishing gangs here. It's frightening, and that's where the resources should be put from the federal government right now. There's a serious gang problem across this country.
Right. Is the gang problem like MS-13? Is it drug based most of the time, or what?
Absolutely, absolutely. The gangs know that they need to sustain an income, and that's the easiest place to do it. And when they know, the other thing that the gangs know is that they seem to sense that there's no interest on the part of the federal government in really making this a priority.
Well, it's a very dangerous thing, is it not?
It certainly is.
To investigate up there.
Yeah, it's certainly, and to, you know, this is what I'm talking about, using your resources in the right area. There isn't a public corruption problem, only one that the government has made because of the fact that they use stings to go after people. There is a gang problem because we're Jersey City and Newark, for example, one of these cities that are, you know, where you wind up with a lot of shootings and a lot of homicides every year as a result of gang related action.
What is the gun rights status there in New Jersey today? Can a man possess a weapon, a rifle, a pistol, or what is the gun laws?
Yes,
they can
possess all that. There are limitations on carrying. You can't carry carrying weapons, and you know, one of the things that New Jersey has tried to do is to put smart gun laws on the books. For example, I was always a proponent when I was in the assembly of really making people responsible for, you know, the sale of guns, you know, that they may have, and basically saying that if you lose a gun, for example, you have to have a responsibility to report that you've lost a gun to a law enforcement authority, so that you know that gun is on somebody's radar screen, that they know that, you know, that there's guns out there that might be a problem, and they could easily check them down through programs we put in place, Operation Ceasefire, which tracks gun-related violence in one town, and they match it up with ballistics of crimes in other towns in the state, and they've been very successful in solving crimes that way.
Right. You know, in Texas, we have open carry here. And,
yeah, that's not in New Jersey. They wouldn't allow that.
Yeah, we recently had a big demonstration in front of the Alamo, and people like Alex Jones and Patterson was our land commissioner, Jerry Patterson. They both spoke down there. We did a live webcast of it, you know, down there. So in Texas here, we're really strong gun rights people, you know.
Well, and especially when you look at what's happening with your border there, you know,
yes,
I have to salute your governor for taking the right steps and doing what he has to do to protect the people of his state.
How much of the illegal immigration problem do you think you have there in New Jersey as far as crime goes?
Well, the problem is, we're not being told. No state is being told where, immigrants who have entered illegally, with the government's help, by the way, are being shifted to. So you don't know that. But we have a lot of, because of, the proximity to New York here, we do have a large illegal immigration population in our jails in New Jersey that has resulted in them being caught in other crimes. So it's a problem.
Right. I've been up to New York in 2007 and 2010, and I've just flown through there lately is all. But downtown New York and on Manhattan seems to be less crime than it used to be, what, two or three decades ago. What's your comments?
You're right, but now it's starting to swing back. The mayor of New York has almost taken on the police department for successful programs that have worked, and he's saying basically that they're infringing on civil liberties. You know, whose civil liberties? I don't know. Usually it's the criminal's civil liberties that we're talking about, but the result of this is has resulted in an upswing in crime in New York, and there's an uneasiness right now about that.
Do you think the Democratic Party has swung too far to the left and far as being too liberal, and there's not enough conservative or moderate elements in the that dominate in the party now?
Nationally, absolutely. I think it's very far left, almost to a socialist party in some things, and it's hurt the party, and I think it's going to, I think you'll see that in the coming elections nationally, it's going to be hard for them to sustain these victories that they have. You know, most of the people, including by the way, the election of Obama, it's not as much as that the Democrats have been, successful in achieving their goals, but it's mainly that the Republicans have been shooting themselves in the foot most of the time in national elections, which have hurt them as a party.
What do you think about the rise of some of the Tea Party candidates and so forth? What's your feel on that? Opinions on that?
Well, I think that the Republican establishment has been overly fearful of the Tea Party and has been reluctant to allow to allow a real intra-party fight to happen and let the best man win. I think that they're doing is they're trying to purge, if you will, these what they consider ultra-conservatives from their party. But you have to meet, they're going to have to meet somewhere in the middle, because if the Tea Party goes their own way and, decides to go as a third party, the Republican Party is going to have a problem, overall, and it's going to be fragmented. You know, a lot of Democrats, believe it or not, conservative Democrats have actually swung over in voting to Republicans because of the problems that they found in their party, where it's gone too far to the left. The Republicans seem to be doing the same thing on the other side, where where they can't find this happy medium between the ultra conservatives and the establishment Republicans.
Do you think that we've departed too far from the Constitution and the strict interpretation of it?
Yes.
And what would be some of the examples of that?
Yes, I have. I think that one of the things you could see that how the president has, basically gone where no other president has, and with health care issues, with his, the decisions basically not to enforce immigration laws. and his being able to, you know, say, well, this is my interpretation of it. Well, you know what? The Congress has to hold his feet to the ground, because it's not that he's trampling on, you know, Republicans on issues. He's trampling the country and the Constitution. And both parties need to pay attention to that. If we don't insist that our elected officials uphold the tenets of the Constitution that they're sworn to with their oath of office, then the rule of law is out the window. The things that I spoke about in my book, you know, more of that is going to happen, where the government just has a free say in everybody's life. You know, our forefathers had it right. They put together a strong constitution and a good constitution, and it's worked very well. We have the problems we now have in this country because we're trying to cut corners and find our way outside the constitution, and it's a disaster.
Boy, I tell you what, Louis Amanzo, you're right on top of this. You know, that's what we've got to get back to, is the Constitution for Democrats and Republicans.
That's,
you know?
Exactly right. That's exactly right. You know what? You hit it right on the head, George. It's not a Democratic, it's not a Republican issue. It's an American issue. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you should insist that the people who run for office in your party respect and uphold the Constitution.
You know, going back to Watergate and then fast forward to today's date, there's been one scandal after another in federal government, and today we've got all these ongoing investigations, and it sort of exemplifies the fact that what this Bid Rig 3 was about. See, it manifests in that, on the New Jersey area. See, you know?
That's exactly right. And the point that I make so much so is that we have a problem with accountability in our federal justice system, and the fact is, you can't have the Department of Justice responsible for investigating themselves when there are problems. And I point this out with the amount of prosecutorial misconduct cases, how only 2% of them are ever really brought to fruition, and it's mainly because the U.S. attorneys are the only people who are allowed to investigate themselves. That shouldn't be. There should be outside counsel looking at them, inspector generals who, just like they do with other departments, should have the sway to overlook, you know, corruption in prosecutors' offices as well. Because that is really, especially now with the amount of prosecutors who decide to run for public office, this is the greatest threat to our Constitution and our civil rights that has ever been put in place by people who have the power to do it.
Right. Boy, I tell you what, you're thinking like I am, you know, and I think there's a lot of people out there that are fed up with all this unconstitutional executive orders and post-signing type, a little signing statement.
That's exactly right.
Has the authority to do that? They don't have the right to do
no, and George, it shoots against everything. We elect local representatives to vote in Congress on laws that, you know, we feel that they advocated one way or the other on. We didn't vote for people to invent and to make up laws without going through the process and avoiding the, you know, our constitutional safeguards. And that's what's happening, you know, all throughout this country today.
Right, with about 50% of the people out there receiving some kind of check or help or subsidy or whatever, have we reached a point to where they'll just vote their own interest, their own pocketbook interest like that? Is that, are we reaching a stage that we've got a lot of socialism already, whether we wanted it or not? It's grown, right?
It is, but most of those, you know, I would still think that seniors, especially seniors who might be the recipient of Social Security checks and might make up the bulk of that population, still have a strong sense of morals and would want to uphold the Constitution. You know, there is a move, especially amongst left-leaning, socialites and left-wing Democrats who say the more government handouts you can give out, the better off we're going to be for a voting block and try to do these programs to establish voting bases. That's wrong, and an activity like that should be curtailed by both parties.
Right. Or is the corporate thing, though, has it grown so large in the, I mean, there's corporations out here, transnationals, that are bigger than some countries economically-wise and income-wise. Have the giant international, transnational corporations created such a – and they've taken a lot of our industry offshore. Can we rebuild America by getting jobs back here or what?
The problem is they have too much to say in our politics, and until you can – these guys have basically payrolled on, you know, Democrats and Republicans throughout the nation to deliver their agenda for them. We need a strong look at how and who is financing our politics on the national level, so we can once again have a caliber of candidates that we once had in the past. I mean, you look back to the 60s, 70s, and even in the 80s, and look at the caliber of the people who ran for office for president. And, you know, you could come up with names that you say, hey, this guy's credible, this guy's credible, that guy's credible. In the 2000s, it's very hard to say on both sides of the aisle that we've had, you know, the best that we can do is the people who are seeking the office. I mean, there's something wrong.
Right. We just got to get more qualified, honest people into politics, but it's become so dirty, I guess some of your better people don't want anything to do with it.
It's that and the money, like I say, the money, you know, has a lot to say about, you know, who we're electing, and people got to follow the trail. That's why I believe, forget about putting limits on what people contribute. What we need in government is disclosure, or we need in campaign finance laws is disclosure. Everyone should know who gave any candidate money, and there shouldn't be anything that any law that allows them to hide that. And that's why I say, you know, these people who shoot to put limitations on contributions should pay more attention on disclosure limits and letting people know who's giving someone money, not how much they're giving them. Because you know what? The American people are smart enough to know that if someone's getting all their money from one party, that the person might have an agenda. But if they don't know where that person's getting the money, right, then we're only pulling the wool over the American people's eyes.
Right. A lady friend of mine by the name of Audrey, she says that the basic problem, or one of the biggest problems, is just secrecy in general.
That's right.
Government secrecy, where everything that is crooked or criminal is hidden behind national security facade. What do you think?
That's exactly right. A lot of those, listen, there were laws that were written, and some of this relates to the to what happened in Bidrick 3. They used laws that were written because of terrorism, to violate rights and to get records from people who weren't involved in terrorism and to throw the book at them. So we don't need a whole series of new laws to protect ourselves from terrorism. We just need people to do the jobs they have. You know, I think it was Ben Franklin that said that if you try to have liberty and security, you're going to lose both.
Right, right. I tell you, we've got to get back to the basic, principles and ideas upon which the nation is founded. Ron Paul experienced a great following because of very simple ideas on liberty and freedom, and mainly this crony capitalism, which he lobbied against with, about the Fed, see?
Mm-hmm.
But when we have the Fed that's financing and funding international financial corporations into the billions of dollars, well, that's not a small
problem.
Listen,
and there's so much stuff that is held back that people don't know about because, you know, this money's filtering down into other avenues of revenue for people that are in power that we don't even know about, and it's frightening. And you know, we ought to heed the words that have created this country, and that's really that government governs best which governs least. And we've gotten far away from you know, what really the founders looked at government being to today, where it's almost running our lives.
Right. We've got about 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes to go. Is there anything else you'd like to add to it that we haven't covered? I'm sure you have some closing comments also.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, especially now with as we're getting into a season where, you know, we're going to be starting to look at people who are going to try to become the next president of the United States, that they could take from Bidrig 3 a sense of how to look at a candidate and how to look at someone's career, not just to apply what I've written about Christie, but apply it and hold the litmus test that's proven in my book up against these people who were asking for their support to run this country. And Bidrig 3 shows you, you know, it's a frightening example of how far afield, you know, this country's law enforcement authority has gone in enabling someone like a Chris Christie to break the law, corrupt his office, and potentially become the next president of the United States.
Right. You're doing a lot of radio interviews, and also are you doing any bookstores and things like that also?
We did some bookstores. We have another schedule coming up in September, you know, once August and the summer season's over. We're going to be doing that again. And, you know, this book is going to have a life of its own, as my publisher said. It was really geared, you know, to mainly towards the, you know, the presidential campaigns as they heated up, and the book has been consistently selling. So it's an interesting book, you know, for people to know about.
What kind of advice would you give to the American public as far as, of course, buying your book and reading it would be number one in my book and yours, you know, your opinions too. But after buying that book and reading it, would they need to take action of some kind or what?
They need to forget about all the commercials that they watch on TV about candidates. They need to take their governments, you know, take who they're voting for serious. Try to watch a debate. Try to find out on your own about the individual. Put that due diligence in that we so much take for granted in this country, our right to vote, and it's a sin because we don't do our due diligence when it comes to selecting candidates or voting for people in office. Find out about who's running for office, who's asking for your vote, because it's the most sacred civil liberty you have is to cast a vote and to put someone in power who has a say, maybe, over, you know, things that are going to affect your life. Pay attention. It's important that they do.
You know, that's great advice. And also, earlier you mentioned something about the money, right?
That's right.
And the transparency of who gives money to which candidate.
We should know, everybody should know, from a penny to $100 million, who's contributing to a candidate. There is no reason whatsoever that any campaign election law should allow a PAC or someone to pass money on to a candidate that the American people shouldn't know who's funding a candidate. I don't care how much money they're getting. It's disclosure. We have a right to know. Nothing should be held a secret.
Right, for sure. Well, thank you very much, Louis Monzo, author of Ruthless Ambition, The Rise and Fall of Chris Christie. We certainly appreciate your comments, and we certainly appreciate the hard work that it took to write that book.
Thank you very much, George, and thank you again for having me.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good night now.